the Award Podcast is brought to you by Naked City Brewery.
Yay! Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 169 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed. And we are no short of awesome this week, folks. First of all, thank you so much for tuning in. If you are new to the program, welcome, and thank you for choosing to listen to us. If you're old, welcome back. We've got a great show planned for you guys this week. A guy by the name of Matt Beatty, who also goes as Ruler on the web. He's got this band. Only one track is available on the net. Do we still call it the net? If we do, I'm still in the know. He's only got one track available on his Bandcamp site. We played it in an episode a little while ago with Marco Collins. It's called Keep Moving by Ruler, and it is so, so good. So I really wanted to have this guy on because I knew that he had other songs, and he ended up bringing his guitar over and playing some tunes for us. So we'll get to that in a moment, but man, let me tell you, this was a really, really good conversation, and I haven't had a conversation like this for a while. Every once in a while, we've done 169 of these shows, and you know, every once in a while, you really hit something with somebody, and you have a lot in common, and it's powerful, man. It's powerful. The power of conversation with somebody that that you have a connection with, or you share some sort of, like, I don't know, in this case, pain with, that's a powerful feeling. And this was a really good talk, a really good chat with Matt Beatty. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to him. I hope you guys enjoy it too. He's an amazing musician, and I know you guys will like the music. So we'll get on that soon. We talk a bit about depression, we talk a lot about depression and a lot about how, we've handled it. Both of us have handled it. And it, you know, it gets a little dark, man. It got a little dark there for a little bit. And even, as he was leaving, my place, what was it, a couple weeks ago, we had to hug it out. We hugged it out. Had a nice chat, had some coffee, had some Naked City Brew, and then we hugged it out a little bit before he took off. Super nice dude, this conversation was top notch in my books, guys. So I hope you guys enjoy it. We do have to mention, our wonderful sponsors, Naked City Brewery and Tap House. They are having a Halloween party at their place, on Thursday, October 31st, of course, Halloween night, and they're going to be doing a bunch of stuff there. They've got, of course, all of your favorite beers. They're also going to be playing a Peter Jackson horror film called Dead Alive. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's amazing. One of my favorite films of all time, just for the special effects alone. God, oh my God, we need to bring back, like, little puppets and things like that. The CGI just ain't cutting it, folks. CGI just is not cutting it in horror movies. We got to bring back the cheesy puppets, right? Anyway, they've got this theater room, and they're going to be playing the Peter Jackson horror film Dead Alive, and having a DJ spin to that movie, make the soundtrack right there, right in front of you. And then also this band called Power Skeleton will be playing a soundtrack to Charlie Brown's It's the Great Pumpkin. And yeah, costume contest, all sorts of awesome stuff is going to be happening. So go check them out, nakedcitybrewing.com, and show them some love as well, because, we want this relationship to last, right? And you do as well, because they help us keep the lights on. So we want to help them out in turn. So go to their Facebook page, Naked City Brewing and Tap House, and like them on Facebook. Tell them that you really like that they have this partnership with us. That would be super helpful. And always remember to suggest that your local pub carry Naked City Brew. And I don't know if they can ship like to other states and stuff, but it's worth a shot. It's worth a shot, folks. All right. Let's do this, shall we? Let's go with our first musical break. And when we get back, we're going to be talking with Matt Beatty of Ruler. He's also in this band, Cataldo. And Ruler, I believe they're playing with Cataldo on November 16th at Barboza here in Seattle. This is going to be a show not to be missed, folks. I think this guy's going to be going places. And it's going to be great to be able to see him in a small venue. So if you're in Seattle, November 16th, Ruler Show at Barboza, go and check it out. This is the song Keep Moving by Ruler, by Matt Beatty. And when we get back, we'll be talking with the man, the myth, the legend, Matt himself. Okay, stick around and enjoy the song Keep Moving by Ruler.
Oh, you keep moving, you keep moving, you keep moving, 'cause you got to. And everywhere you look, there's people, but there's no one there to help you. Shouldn't have sold your soul, shouldn't have given up. Shouldn't have sold your soul, shouldn't have given up. But it came. Oh, you keep moving, you keep moving, you keep moving, 'cause you got to. And all around you there are people, but there's no one there to help you. You shouldn't have sold your soul, shouldn't have given up. Shouldn't have sold your soul.
Yeah, I'm pretty nervous.
I try to, see, this is what I tried to do. Like, I have you into the house, and we chat for a little bit, get acquainted, make some coffee. And then that usually kind of, makes people a little bit more ready to come into this room and chat with me. So did that work at all?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm at ease. This is a great place. But I was talking to people about coming on here because I'd never done anything like this.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, just remember to be really nice and remember that it's going to last forever. Everything you say is just going to be there forever. You can't change it.
And it's funny you say that too, because there's been countless times where people will come back. They'll email me like the next day and they'll say, hey, you remember that part where I told you about how much money I made for playing at that college? Can we take that out? Or, remember that part where I was talking shit about Mike McCready? can we can we maybe put a beep in there? Just beep his name out or something? And it's always okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex was like, I know you have a tendency to talk a lot of shit, but just remember, when you go in there, just talk about how excited you are about anything.
There you go. There you go. That's one thing. That's one thing that we, well, I hesitate to say we have in common, but your girlfriend, Alex, in Cumulus.
Yeah.
Was on the show, I don't know.
Oh, is she your girlfriend too?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I didn't want to tell you here, but, you know, since we're talking about awkward things, we might as well just bring it up. No, she's been on the show. Cumulus, I had her and Leah on the show a little while ago. I didn't know you guys were an item. And now that I know that, I was like, before you arrived, I was like, wow, these guys are going to be like, they're going to be like the Seattle power couple here soon.
Yeah, I'd have to do something like substantial for us to do my part as power couple.
I think, and remind me, what's the name of the song that you have up on your Bandcamp again?
It's called Keep Moving.
Keep Moving. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I've been listening to that song a lot, and it's very telling of where my memory is going, that I can't remember what the name of the song, one song is. But I think you're already on track here, buddy, for doing some pretty spectacular things with how that song's, you know, being received in town right now.
Yeah.
And just how it sounds. I mean, that song is amazing. When did you write that?
I wrote that in 2011 in a practice space in Georgetown.
Uh-huh.
And I just wrote it on the spot. Like, I used to go down there and just spend the whole day making music and watching movies.
Yeah.
And it would take like 2 hours total transportation time to go, so I'd just stay overnight. And
so you just sleep there?
Mm-hmm.
Just sleep on the floor or something? Did
you
have a couch?
I brought like an extra jacket so that I could lay on one jacket and use another one as a blanket. But I didn't really sleep very much either. I would just sort of take little cat naps whenever I needed to and
continue
making music as like I would have a coffee pot, so I would keep the caffeine going and keep. And so I've got a lot of stuff from those days, but that one just happened to turn out really well on the first try.
So you said that song kind of came together pretty quickly, huh?
Yeah. I was listening to a lot of Toon Yards when Who Kill came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I just loved her use of percussion and loops and how everything would stop and start. So
yeah,
I was trying to emulate that.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, man. Yeah, it's a great song. It's a fantastic song.
Thanks you. Yeah. Thanks you. He thanks you from...
Don't worry, man. Don't worry. Just keep it going. Just keep it going.
I got this.
So do you still have that same space down in Georgetown? Or are you somewhere else?
No, I want to say like 3 months after I recorded that song, I got fired from my job.
Oh, really?
And so I had to lose the space and sell all my music equipment.
Uh-huh.
And then... And then you
had to sell all your equipment?
I had to sell everything except for one guitar.
Is that the one that you brought here today?
No, this isn't mine. This is my mom's.
Oh.
I mean, I've had it for years. But she maintains, she's like, no matter how broke you are, you can't sell that guitar.
You can't sell that guitar.
It's
not yours.
And so I've never think of it as mine either because I would have sold it. Yeah, I sold everything except for one guitar and then... And then I kind of bought stuff as I needed it. I play in another band and we had a tour, so I had to buy stuff again. And then after the tour, I sold it all.
What band was that?
Cataldo.
Oh, Cataldo. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That's what you were saying earlier. I don't think I ever heard of your other band.
Yeah, I started playing in Cataldo in 2009.
Okay.
I think that might not be right. It was around that time.
Uh-huh.
And... we just finished a new record.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I'll forward it to you.
Yeah, yeah, please do. What's the arrangement like in that band?
I play the guitar.
Guitar and is there just bass and drums or something? Or?
Yeah, now there's going to be, well, we have a horn section for the new record.
Oh, okay.
So we've got three horn players and then me on guitar. And then the singer, Eric, is just going to sing. He's not going to be playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a keyboard player. And bass player.
Right,
and
right.
Drummer.
Yeah. Because there was, like, I tried to do research on you, but there's nothing.
there.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I know is that I got this thing on Facebook from Marco Collins, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, maybe a month, 2 months ago or something. It was like, check this out. Ruler, right? One yeah. song up on Bandcamp, no information whatsoever. And I was like, holy shit, I was blown away. I was totally blown away by that song.
Thank you.
And so I was really excited to have you on because I saw that you have not, I mean, there's nothing about you anywhere. And so I didn't even know that you were in this other band, Cataldo.
Yeah.
So you have been playing music for a long time, it sounds like.
I moved to Seattle in 2005 when I was 18.
From where?
From Helena, Montana.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
And I came here for the express purpose of playing music, and uh-huh. I've just been playing in some way ever since then.
Yeah, yeah. Was it hard to get into the music scene here?
I mean, I don't know if my experience is a very good gauge because I was a pretty, like, emotionally disturbed 18-year-old. So, yes, it was difficult, but I don't know yeah. how much of that was my fault, probably most of it.
I think it's kind of a closed system, or it yeah. used to be anyway. When did you said 2009?
2005.
2005 is when you came
out. And then I had released a solo record back then,
uh-huh.
But don't listen to it. And then I think, like,
that's what I say about all my old stuff that I did when I was 18. Yeah, you shouldn't check that out.
It's not that great.
Don't search it out.
It's good
please.
For me, like, for posterity. Like, I'll show my kids, like, well, when I was 18, I released this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, what have you done with your life?
At least I tried. And so I released that, and then a group of guys recruited me to be a singer and songwriter in another band.
Oh, cool.
That I don't really want to talk about. And I went on to play in for like 5 more years.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I fondly think of those days as my college years. So it's like, yeah. Oh, he was young. It's everybody in the band was older than me. And I was like still trying to get my meds right as a 19 or 20-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they, like, approaching their 30s are like, oh, this guy's good at singing. We're going to start this band. And I, as a young person, am just like, I don't know how to live my life.
Well, that's got to be a pretty big, I mean, that's a big thing, man. Like, God, when I was 18, I was scared to death to go to college in a different town. Mm-hmm. Like, I had grown up in a small town, like, my whole life. And so, like, moving away from that.
Where are you from?
Was huge. I am from a small town over on the Kitsap Peninsula.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, near Kingston. I hesitate to say this because I think it'll probably be wrong, but I feel like the population of my hometown of Indianola when I was growing up in the 80s was like somewhere around like maybe 800.
Oh, wow.
700, 800. Town. Yeah, we had a country store and a post office and a clubhouse, and that was it.
Nice clubhouse. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It was a great place to grow up, man, but like, whoa, boy. When I moved away from there, like, that was everything I knew. You know,
yeah.
was in that town. And when I moved away to another small town, admittedly, it was Ellensburg, to go to college.
Oh, Ellensburg.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. It was still pretty small, but I mean, that was like big city for me, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah, it was really weird. I don't see how any 18-year-old could just hop on a bus and move from Helena, Montana to Seattle. I mean, that must have been pretty scary.
Well, I had a friend that lived here.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that makes it a little bit easier.
He was a good dude. We were in a band together in high school.
Okay.
And so I think the idea was that I would move to Seattle and then we'd continue to play music together.
Uh huh.
I just moved to Seattle and then started playing music and we never really did anything together.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But he went on to be, he's like a pretty big shot sound dude now.
Oh, yeah.
He, like, tours with Gwar.
What?
And, like, will do sound for, like, Macklemore or, like, the Blue Scholars.
Holy shit.
Common Market. Yeah.
That's great,
like,
man.
Group. Yeah. He's That's a good cool. dude.
God, he goes on tour with Gwar?
Yeah. He says those tours are the best. Like, metal festival tours
yeah.
are the most posh, well-catered, comfortable tours that you could go on. Just because there's so much money there, like
right, and it's all coming from Germany. All that money, it's like they pay people in like golden cougarons or cougarants, however you say that.
Man, I've never seen Gwar though. I really have you seen Gwar?
Yes, I saw Gwar a couple years back. They came and they played the Showbox in Soto, and my buddy who I used to play music with was like, "We have to go see them." live because it's Gwar. And I was like, you're right. And so we went down to the showbox and checked it out. And the sound wasn't that great there, but the closer you got to the stage, I mean, it was awesome. And they were so tight.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, the only live Gwar experience I have, or I had prior to that experience, the showbox experience, was seeing them on that movie, License to Drive. In the 80s? What movie was that?
That doesn't sound like a name of a movie.
It is, though. It is. I think that's with Corey Haim. Gwar?
First memory of Gwar is on Empire Records. How Mark eats the pot brownie, and then he's watching Gwar on the TV in the back room. And all of a sudden, he's on stage with Gwar.
Yeah, yeah.
And he gets eaten.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, totally. Totally.
Hey, Mark, you love Gwar. Why don't you join the band?
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
No, they were in some movie in, like, maybe late 80s, early 90s. What is that? I'm looking at it now. This is just great fake radio.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this on, where is it? Somebody's going to know, and they're going to sharpshoot me here. And you're like, how did you not know that?
While you're really looking for it, just
painful email.
Remind me of the name of this beer that we're drinking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey. Wow. Professional. we are enjoying some Naked City Brewery beers today because they are the fine sponsors of this here program. And they're great people. They got a great place down there on Greenwood Avenue at 8564 Greenwood Avenue North here in Seattle. And if you're in the area, go and check it out because it's a great place. You passed by it today, didn't you?
Yeah, I was sort of nodding off on the bus on the way here.
Yeah? Then you missed your stop and you had to
My stop and then I had to double back and I had to walk past them.
And so you looked into the windows of Naked City Brewery.
Yeah, I remember thinking, well, there's nobody there today. I presume they take Sundays off.
No, they don't. I think they open up at like 3 or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
No, it just looked cool. I like the design elements of businesses like that.
Yeah.
Where they're like, people will respect them for what they do, but they didn't put a lot of, I probably shouldn't say this. They didn't put
this
a lot
of. This is what Alex is talking about when she says, you talk a lot of shit.
It's not shit talking, though. I'm just saying, like, they didn't hire, like, the best graphic designer to come up with the font for their front window, but that is what I like about it. It's not like, it's not like whoever does all the work for like the condos going in on Capitol Hill.
Right.
It's just
right,
like, so the condos go up and then on the bottom are like, you know, quote unquote artisanal.
Yeah. Thing. Like, yeah.
And it's just an excuse to like sell you booze.
Yes.
You know, It's just like, we specialize in green olives. We're called Green Olives. And then like the font on the outside is really douchey and dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always in cursive too, right?
But Naked City is just like, yeah, we just found a great font in, like, Word, and we just printed it out real big.
I'll tell them that.
Yeah.
Because I know the owners now. Yeah, it is a great place, and we're enjoying some fancy beer. I think it's an oatmeal stout or something like that. I don't know exactly what the name is. If you're in the area, go and check them out. And what I want you guys to do is help us out by helping them out, because they are helping keep the lights on here in the backyard. So go to their Facebook page. This is what we do. All right. We're gonna bring it down a notch. We're gonna whisper a little bit.
Just go because to www.
Like on KUOW. www. You gotta enunciate each W. But go to their Facebook page and tell them that you are super excited that they are in a partnership with the Air Raid podcast, because we want them to know that they are, you know, doing something right, and that their money is going to a good place. So do that, right? Or just go and visit them, or go to your favorite pub and ask for Naked City Brews.
Naked City Big Labrewski.
Yes,
is that a name of their like a thing they do?
That's their first bottled beer that they just made for their 5th anniversary, which was, I believe, yesterday. Yeah, so maybe there'll be some left. I doubt it, but But yeah, that's going to be a pretty popular one. White Russian Imperial Stout. That sounds delicious, right? Yeah. Naked City Brewery and Tap House here in North Seattle. Ask for them at your favorite pub. So what were we talking about? We were talking about
guar. Keeping notes about...
You're keeping notes. This is great because I don't do that.
I'm just... Because my mind is kind of out of sorts right now. I'm just checking off the things that we talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
So far I have like talked about the song, talked about guar, and talked about the sponsor.
So maybe we should move back into you territory, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No.
This is my show.
I'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. whatever.
Yeah, let's move on because I can't remember and I can't seem to find the name to that 80s movie that guar was in. But yeah, great band. I mean, it was an awesome show. It was an awesome show. Just like all their visual stuff that they had up on stage, man, it was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool. So worth it.
I love it when bands just really pull out all the stops.
Oh, yeah.
And like guar obviously is the extreme example. But
oh, yeah.
I just went and saw Tim Kasher at Barboza. He's a singer in that band Cursive.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In The Good Life. And it wasn't theatrical in any way, but mm-hmm. there was so much personality coming off of the stage,
right,
that I'm not used to. Like, this is not shit-talking, but I feel like in Seattle, I just sort of decide whether or not the person is actually singing a song or not. And then it'll just be like, there's some music, we're playing some music, and here are the lyrics. And it's just like, okay, it sounds like a song. But then when you actually see a band where there's a lot of personality and passion coming off the stage, I'm just like, oh, man, that's why they're a real band.
Yeah, yeah. Is that something that you try to do in your own shows?
Well, Rulers only played one full band show.
And that was Marco Collins' Glamour and Squalor benefit.
Yeah, yeah. And I had kind of been casually emailing my musician friends being like, hey, I don't know, I just want to gauge your interest in maybe playing some shows in the near future because I'm trying to hurry myself along with the record.
Right, right.
But had never done a rehearsal or anything.
Yeah.
And so when Marco approached me and asked me if I wanted to play with a full band, I just sent out an email to every single person I knew. And I thought maybe I would get a whole band back, then ended up with a 7-piece band at the... at the benefit show.
Right, man. I saw the videos. I was supposed to go to that show, and I'm kicking myself because I ended up not going. But it wasn't really my fault.
Were you like teaching your kids to read or something?
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. yeah, my daughter was a little bit sick. Like, having a kid in, side note, by the way, having a kid in daycare is like the worst thing ever.
Why is it the worst?
Well, it's the worst for your kid because your kid gets sick like constantly.
Yeah.
And it's the worst for you because then you have to take care of a sick kid constantly and then you get sick constantly. So it's like, you know, it's a trifecta of just shittiness.
Yeah.
But she learns a lot and everything.
Is
so
she
it's,
sick right
it's
now?
Definitely. What's that?
Is she sick right now?
No, no. Better? She's better. Oh,
she was just, you were trying to get her to nap when I came.
Yeah.
It was really funny. I walked through the door and then in the background I could just hear like, Mom, Mom, just like no response.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever watched Family Guy?
Yeah.
You ever watched that? You know where Stewie's like, Mama, Mommy, Mama, Mama. She does that. And it makes me laugh every time because every time I'm just like, oh, that's Stewie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's evil. But just joking, just joking. Yeah, she's great though. But yeah, that's what were we talking about? Holy shit, are you keeping track of this?
I didn't write any of that down. Let's see.
Family Guy. This is the problem is I go on a side note and then I can't get back on track and then we just never talk about
I'm a musician. We're here to talk about that.
Were we talking about
guar? We were talking about the band. We did we covered guar.
No, but you played your first show. So you played your first show at Marco Collins.
Oh, we were talking about if I try to bring like special personality and effort to the stage. I do, but I don't really. I'm not really quite sure what that means yet for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the show.
But you've been playing in bands for a little while now, right? I mean,
yeah, but
you gotta have a good idea of what it means to like put some real energy up there on stage, right?
I would say. I mean, I can bring the rock like at the drop of a hat. I'll do it right now. But what I'm really interested in is just giving people a special experience beyond just being like loud and boisterous. And the way I'm doing it now, or starting out is to sort of do a full band, like, hype session before the show.
Right, right. So y'all, like, get in a circle and you hold each other by the, shoulders.
I mean, we did the one at the Glamour and the Squalor, and it went really well, but I didn't plan it. I was going to give everybody a pep talk, and then I was so nervous that I needed everybody to give me a pep talk instead. But I just sort of, I don't know. I'm really into using cheesy corporate team building tactics on a band, setting. So it's like, I want to get the ruler band to do trust falls and, like, to talk about their feelings. And then, but it's cool in the situation I'm in, because at any given time I can be like, okay, we're done with that. We need to, like, play the show now. Whereas, like, in the past, I don't know. I feel like you have to be a good, you have to be good at rallying people.
Yeah, I think you're pretty good at it, man. I watched the videos of it and saw you do some banter, some stage banter. You know,
I didn't see any videos of my stage. Oh,
really?
Right. I said, give Marco Collins your life savings.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. That was good. That was a good jab. because it's funny and it's true. Give him your goddamn life savings, people.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
But I want to see the movie come out.
That movie's going to be really good.
I saw the trailer, and then there was the clips they played at the benefit show, and I was like, oh man, I want to watch this.
It's going to be really interesting. I've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole lately with watching like 90s, like documentaries about 90s bands. Mm-hmm. Like I just watched, and this was Marco Collins suggested I watch this one last night. Is the documentary on Hole's drummer, Patty Schemmel.
Oh.
It's called Hit So Hard or something like that. But it's really good. It's really good. But it's really hard to, like, have a documentary that doesn't turn into a documentary about Kurt Cobain. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like a 90s music.
That a lot. It's like people they'll talk about something really legitimately interesting.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In order to capture the most attention possible, they'll work Nirvana into it somehow. Like if it was around the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, that was the time that Nirvana was around. So that put it in a whole new context.
Yeah, totally. And that's what happened. That's what happened with that documentary that I was watching last night. I even had to like think about it for a second. I was like, wait a minute. Aren't we watching isn't this supposed to be a documentary on Hole's drummer? Yeah. You know, but she was close friends with Kurt and whatnot. But it kind of devolved into like a pretty serious documentary about Kurt and Courtney.
Yeah.
And their relationship.
I mean, you know, if you're making a documentary, who can really blame, you know, the person who's in charge for being like, all right, we need to like take this in this direction. Because it's like the easiest documentary to make.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's
totally
fascinated by it and nobody knows what the hell happened.
But here's the problem is that there's 150,000 documentaries about Kurt and Courtney.
Yeah.
You know? So
I've seen about half of them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I never get tired of it. So do you think this is something that you're going to like practice, like, you know, your stage presence and things like that?
For me, it's a question of like, how honest are you allowed to be? About your, because people say like, oh, you should just express yourself and be yourself on stage, and that'll be like good enough.
And these are people that have never been on stage, either,
or no, like people who have gone on stage and just happened to work for them.
Uh-huh.
Like Alex, my girlfriend, for example, just the things that she says that just come out of her brain are fine.
Yeah.
They're so funny, but it doesn't work that way for everybody. You kind of have to look back at what you've said and decide like what's landing, you know, and like which parts of my personality are better left to just and the people who are close to me.
Yeah. Let me just tell you a quick story. I host this this thing called Crackle Fest at Comic-Con at the Hard Rock Cafe each year. I've been doing it for the last couple of years. And it's a bunch of like nerd rock bands that come, and I'm the MC. And I got up there this year. It was sold out, 450 people, 500 people, something like that. And I had some jokes, you know, and I chose to like dial it back a little bit on the nerd jokes. Like I was gonna like bring on full on like Klingon. Like I was gonna say something in Klingon, you know, as a punchline. And I was like, you know, maybe that's too nerd. That's too much. Not enough, man. Like. I took that part out, and I probably should have left it in because there was like one dude laughing, and he was the drunk guy in the front going, yeah, yeah. And it was just dead silence. 450 people.
Oh, man.
Standing
suck.
Up there. It was terrible. It was terrible. But I had a great time doing it.
Sounds
for some
like
reason.
A great time.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, sounds awful. That's what it sounds like. Oh, but yeah, man. It takes a lot of practice, man. And I'm not a comedian, you know? Yeah. I'm not even that great of a musician. But, like, you know, it's just something you gotta practice, right?
It's weird, too, because stage banter is supposed to be funny or interesting. And it's way easier to be funny than it is to be interesting.
I think that if the people know who you are, if they're there mm-hmm. to see you, they're not going to give a shit. Because they're going to think whatever you say is interesting and is funny.
I think
right?
at the majority of shows, you'd be correct. But uh-huh. when you're playing in Seattle, even if you are sort of a big deal, I think you're playing inevitably to a room full of musicians who are just like, I could do that.
Yeah.
That's I could true. Do that. I don't even
that's
know.
That's actually pretty true. Yeah. Yeah. I get that feeling
was,
a
that's
lot.
What was so cool about the Glamour and the Squalor show.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because so many big name people agreed to go up on stage and play, which made it even more absurd that we were there playing our first show.
And you had one song on Bandcamp.
But they were literally, you know, like without a doubt playing to a full room of musicians,
uh-huh,
all of
yeah,
whom like yeah. were like really nice. Like everybody's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
totally.
I think in their minds, we're just like, I could do that.
I could do that, and I could get paid $1 million.
And it's crazy to see somebody like who is really well established, who mm-hmm. could go anywhere in the country or possibly the world, and just play to a packed room of people,
right?
Who they would just have their full attention.
Oh yeah.
And now
yeah.
they're in a situation where they have to win over the audience for the first time in like 10 years. You know, and they're trying all the old tricks, but they're not quite sure.
Right, right.
You're supposed to love it.
A little rusty on some of those things, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, do you want to play
oh,
a
yeah.
song for us?
Yeah, I can play the music.
An unhindered pace through the dark and dingy places, all just to see a hopeless sight and keep a smile on my face. Yeah, I'm trying not to make a front. But have you seen the best of me? Yeah. My lover, won't you make me strong? Fun faces pack a punch to please, oh. No skill or will could ever last. Unless it faces constant task. And everything's a step for me, I place by me. My own path, yeah. I still could find the time to choose. I'm always looking out for number one now. But my friends are ones who make it through. The rest will always fall away and run, but no skill or will could ever last. Unless it faces constant tasks. Every day's a test for me that's placed by me in my own path, yeah. No skill or will could ever last. Unless it faces constant task.
All right. That was fantastic.
Thanks.
That was really, really good, man. Yeah, very impressed. Very impressed with your musicality, sir.
Thanks.
So when did music start for you? Like, you say that's your mom's guitar, so she must have been a bit musical as well, right?
Yeah, I've had I've been borrowing a guitar from my mom since the beginning.
Ever since I can remember.
Yeah. No, she was somebody who played music in church.
And, oh, okay.
So there's a guitar around the house.
Yeah.
Which was cool. And I like started playing she had a songbook that had songs by like the Birds and Bob Dylan and stuff.
Oh, nice.
So those were like the
nice.
First songs I learned how to play.
Yeah. And so music, you were kind of always surrounded by it then, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wasn't super psyched about my mom playing music in church and be like, that's what I want to do.
Right, right.
It was just
right.
like, oh, music is out there. And I remember it was probably when I was 12 or 13, it occurred to me that because I was doing so badly in school, I should choose something to be good at in life.
Yeah.
That was not school, just as a backup in uh-huh. case I was always bad in school, which it's a good thing I chose a backup. And so I just chose the guitar, and I would just play guitar, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be a guy who writes songs because that's a thing that people respect.
Right on. Right on.
And, yeah, I would just play like 8 hours a day and
yeah.
just completely neglect everything else in my life. You know. And now here I am. I'm yeah. still doing it.
Did you ever end up like going to college or anything like that?
No, I never wanted to go to college.
Mm-hmm. After high school, just done.
Yeah, I mean, I got through high school because... It's kind of a funny, like, I got by because I think teachers were just like, well, we don't really want to fail this kid, but we don't really get it either.
He's really
so
nice.
We'll say, yeah, and, like, since the third grade, teachers have said stuff to me like, you know what's great about you? Is that you go by the beat of your own drummer, and you're just, like, a unique perspective. You're like Steven Spielberg. And, like, now in the future, I'm looking back, and I'm just like, fuck you. You should have, like, been nicer to me and, like, helped me learn things. They're just like, he's going to be like, you know, he's the next Quentin Tarantino, so we don't really have to worry about it.
Well, I think they were onto something. maybe not so much the Quentin Tarantino part, but, yeah,
I don't know.
They were definitely onto something.
Did he go to college?
I can't remember. I have no idea.
I know
I have
Spielberg
no idea.
Didn't. I don't know that either. But I remember being compared to him. I'm just like, I don't even want to make movies.
yeah, that's not really in my purview. That's not what I'm looking for.
So music started for me as a very desperate attempt to be like good at something. And it
yeah,
was pretty
yeah.
it was pretty successful. You know, like I would... I would just turn in music projects in place of other projects in any
right,
class.
Right,
it could be history class, science class.
Yeah.
You know, like a song about math. I'm just like, well, this is what I'm going to be turning in. So you can either fail me or you can recognize the skills
yeah,
and
yeah.
just let me move on. To
you can
fame
give
and
me
fortune.
A grade for effort, please.
Yeah. yeah. Can you write a song? Yeah, I can't do math, so I feel like we're pretty even.
Oh, my God. So was your mom or your parents pretty nervous when you moved out here to the city at such a young age?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe they were. And for good reason, because I didn't adjust well to the city, and I think they saw that coming.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things like growing up. I was obsessed with music growing up and almost nothing else. So when I entered the adult world and it turned out I couldn't ignore all of my responsibilities and just play music, I kind of lost it for like a couple of years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
like how so?
Well, you know, you grow up with these preconceived notions about how your life is going to be.
Uh-huh.
And I think for anybody that eventually turns into something else, and it's always fine, but it just turns into something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for me, I had put so much emotional energy into this being a musician basket that I wasn't prepared for like, oh, you have to like keep a job now.
Yeah, yeah. You have to pay your bills.
Yeah.
I mean, was that one of the big things right there is like money management?
Yeah.
yeah.
And, you know, to this day, I like am trying to make this record and pay
uh-huh.
my rent at the same time, and I just can't figure
right,
it out.
Right, right. yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to pay for a record, man. It's super expensive for studio time and paying musicians that are coming in to do stuff with you if they're not like close friends or something like that.
Yeah.
Have you had to do that? Have you had to like pay other people to come and contribute?
No. I mean, there was one person who played on one of the songs that I've recorded who did a bunch of cello tracks, Sam Anderson.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's
all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gave me a great deal. But he's the only other musician who's played on the track so far.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to do it all myself because I get into such a weird emotional place when I'm making music that I feel bad to have anybody go through that around me.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I'm in a studio, I make sure to tell the engineer beforehand. I'm just like, hey, I'm going to get like kind of weird probably for like most of the day, but it's not you. And it's not because I'm not happy with what's going on. It's just because like I have to access something inside my mind that doesn't agree with me being a normal like social being.
So what do? You just like, you basically just shut down?
It's hard to explain. I guess I've never described it before, but when I go into the studio, I usually like to have a lot of caffeine right before I go in.
Right.
And then I'll bash out the idea really quickly, and then I'll say like, okay, we need to break for like an hour, and then I'm going to lay on the floor and watch some of my favorite scenes from my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Then we're going to come back and listen back to what I did, and we probably will only keep part of it. And then we'll move forward from there. And then that will repeat throughout the day, which for most people just drives them crazy.
Because you're not constantly working.
Yeah, it's like, well, I can't just continue to record all day without some sort of reading on if the emotional energy is in the right place.
Right.
And that's weird if you commit an hour of paid studio time to just laying on the floor and looking at movie scenes. If there are other musicians in the room, they can't handle it.
No.
They're like, oh man, we're spent. Well, I mean, you are paying so much money for the studio time. How could you just sit there? And it's like, it's going to be worthless unless I pick out the thing that is working.
Right.
But I'd just rather not explain that to most people. So I just go to the studio by myself.
Yeah. I can understand that. Yeah. I can understand that.
That's why staying overnight in the practice space was so fun when I did it, because I could just fall asleep for however long I wanted and wake up and continue on with the idea.
Yeah.
You have to like refresh your emotional self so that you can get a, you know, good reading on what you're doing.
Yeah. I totally get it. Mm-hmm. I get that. Cause this is one thing we were kind of talking about, before we came into the studio. We were just sitting in the kitchen and, BSing, but like it sounds like the social anxiety is playing into this quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
You know, like you're surrounded by people that you may or may not be totally comfortable with. And like that was one thing that always bugged me whenever I went into the studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I would never be totally comfortable with the engineer, or whoever's in there, you know, the producer or anybody, because they were not in the practice space 24/7 like we were, right?
Yeah.
And it was somebody that was totally different, that was, you know, maybe trying to direct you in a certain way or something like that. And it just never was comfortable for me.
Yeah. I do a lot of prep before I go into a studio situation. I make sure it's either me and one other person or me and somebody who I've brought specifically to like give me hype energy and the engineer. But like, I don't like to have a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
I'll send a lot of emails beforehand to the engineer being like, this is how the day is going to go. We're going to work really fast right off the bat. Then it's going to slow way down.
Yeah.
And then it may take off like a rocket at any point. So just be ready for it. And like, if that doesn't work, you should say so now.
Yeah. Right. So what other aspects of your life does this social anxiety kind of come up?
I mean, it pretty much is my life.
Yeah.
I mean, dealing with depression and anxiety is it's an everyday thing. I almost like give myself a big pat on the back at the end of every day that I don't like, you know, screw up my relationship or lose my job.
Yeah.
And I just happen to get by without wrecking anything. And I'm
right,
just like, you did it again, Matt. Another Tuesday without
good for you, yourself. Brother.
Yeah. So
you deserve some cake.
Man, that's got to be the hardest thing though, is just to keep a job. And I have like a pretty great job.
Uh-huh.
but I'm always on edge because I've gotten fired from like 3 jobs in the past.
Because of like depression and anxiety?
I attributed to depression and anxiety. It's kind of hard to tell. Like if you're kind of going off the deep end and you're late for work for 3 times in a row within the span that they will say that you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Is that because of depression and anxiety, or is it because you just need to learn to be on time for work? It's both, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't expect anybody to cut you any slack for this type of thing.
Right. Do you realize that though? Like in the moment, it sounds like you've had some issues with that.
I do realize it in the moment. It's pretty frustrating, because I know that if I were in a position where it was something else, that there wasn't such a stigma attached to, that it would be, I probably wouldn't get fired for being late. If I was like, oh, I have migraines, which are debilitating in a totally different way. But, you know, it's gonna be like, oh man, he was late because he had a migraine. He has a lot of migraines.
Yeah.
And people would understand that. But if you tell them, like, I struggle with depression, there's so many different definitions of what that is to different people. They're like, oh yeah, I was depressed once, but I got over it. Let's fire him.
Right.
And I can't blame them for that either, because it's so unclear. Everybody's on this different spectrum with depression.
Right. Right.
So yeah,
I'm in there too, man. Like I totally understand where you're coming from, because it's definitely something that, like, it's like people now who say that they're a nerd, right? It's like, you know, it means something totally different to certain people.
Yeah. Well, it's been rebranded now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, of course. And it's so prevalent on television and things like that. Like you see ads for drugs now all the time, you know, everywhere. Yeah, it's like a normal everyday thing. But I don't think a lot of people can really relate to being absolutely debilitated by it.
Yeah, I think that the level that you are genuinely debilitated, people don't really believe it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They're like, well, I had trouble getting out of bed too, but I just pour myself a cup of coffee and I'm okay. And it's like, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And also, you know, just the fact that everybody experiences depression on some level, they then think that you are on that same level that they are.
Right.
Even if you're both diagnosed with depression, people's depression feels different, you know? Mm-hmm. And I almost, when I talk to other people who are depressed and try to give me advice, or even I'll catch myself trying to give advice sometimes,
being like,
you know, you should do, you know, wake up and then do this. This is my routine. It's just like, that won't work for them. It's a totally different thing, because it's a part of who they are and part of their individual.
And it's always a different set of circumstances too. Mm-hmm. It's not only the chemistry in their brain. It's like a whole slew of things that's probably been building up for years and years and years that have led to them feeling a certain way. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was for me too. Like, I always, from the time I was a small child, like I was always depressed, and my parents noticed it very early because my dad kind of suffered from the same thing. We had his brother had committed suicide when I was about 6 years old or something like that. And like, and my dad was very afraid that I would be going through the same stuff. And I was. Yeah. And so at a very young age, they started putting me into therapy. Mm-hmm. And on all sorts of, and it was like the first thing, the therapist, I hated going to the therapist. I went to so many different therapists as a kid. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. And they would always put me on a new drug, like the drug, you know, Prozac didn't work. So they'd put me on Effexor or Paxil or something like that. And I was on Paxil for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think I was telling you this in the kitchen too, like, man, some of that stuff, when you go off of it.
Yeah, you tapered off of Paxil. It's not good for you.
Shit, man. I mean, it was bad. It was like coming down off of, you know, off of like methamphetamines.
Yeah.
You know, it was really, really tough. And it was like, I mean, people don't understand, like, some of those psychotropic drugs or antidepressants. I don't know if those would be the same thing, but, you know, it's a real thing. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the brand that I take are SSRIs. I've always been on some SSRI or another, and I keep the Wikipedia article for SSRI discontinuation syndrome in my phone.
Yeah. So that so when you can
I'm
show people
explaining it to people, just like, oh, I'm having a rough time right now. I probably can't remember what I'm talking about. It's because of this.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. It's on Wikipedia, but you've never heard of it.
It's like you're the super hip kid too. I'm really into this band that you've never heard of. Yeah. Yeah.
I've got discontinuation syndrome. It's kind of underground right now, but
it's you'll know about it in about a year.
I'm doing that right now. I ran into a problem refilling my prescription, and so now I'm like, I'm kind of on the end of it. Like the worst of it was the last few days, and then today I'm just sort of a little Forrest Gump about everything. Just
Well, I remember that too. It would just make you feel stupid. Too, like you weren't in the right headspace ever, you know, when you'd miss a dose or something like that, you know. And it was like it's a drug. You're on a emotionally altering drug, you know, something that is like firing synapses for you. And once you miss that stuff, man, it's like really messes with your system.
And you become acutely aware of how much your emotions and the way that you act is a total result of the balance of chemicals in your brain.
Yeah.
And if you just throw one off just a little bit, you can't, you know, wash your hands correctly. Like it just, wires get crossed.
Right.
And now I'm like, how do buses work? I can't get off on the stop.
And that's why you missed the stop today and walked past Naked City.
Yeah.
Our beautiful sponsors to the show.
Yeah. And you know what? As soon as I saw that building, I was like, I'm going to be okay.
You're going to be just fine. Places like that exist, we're just going to be fine. Yeah. Do you notice it? Like, because when I was in college, so I went to college and I was still on Paxil.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like halfway through my first year, my freshman year of college, like I was like, I got to stop using this stuff because I was missing doses all the time. Like it wasn't working for me anymore, right? Like I would take an antidepressant for a certain amount of time and then it would just stop working. And most of that was probably because like I would miss, you know, taking it and then like, you know, like you're going through right now, like forget to go and get the prescription filled.
Yeah.
And then they're closed during the weekend. I can't get it, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Just the end. I think something that's under communicated when you start a medication like that is like, now if you end up running out for any reason, the logistics of getting more are going to be 10 times more difficult.
Right.
Because you're going to be losing your mind the whole time.
Uh-huh.
And on top of that, nobody's going to believe you.
Right.
So you have to act normal in every way.
Yep.
And then figure it out, which is going to take a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever think that this is something that you'll be able to handle? Like, because where I was getting my college experience was that once I finally got off of it and like the withdrawal symptoms went away, because they were weird, man. Like, Paxil withdrawal symptoms were extremely weird. Like, I got super-duper depressed for a little while. Was having, like, suicidal thoughts and stuff like that, like, really bad. And I was getting these, like, electric shocks through my system.
Yeah,
like,
I'm it doing that literally right now. I can feel it right now.
Felt electricity, like, going through my body.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, some people call it, like, jellyfish.
Yes, that like yeah, that. Exactly. That's exactly what it feels like. And you're just like, eh. You like every once in a while, you just, you know, it shocks your system. And I don't know if that's something that they like, maybe they built it in there as like, hey, you need to take another pill soon.
No, it's, I was actually reading about it because I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to wait X number of days before I can stop this the way I know it stops.
Right, right.
So how do I manage the symptoms in the meantime? So I'm reading up on it online. And they don't know why that happens. There's like, I read a few theories on why those withdrawal symptoms or discontinuation symptoms, as they like to call them.
Yeah.
But nobody really knows.
Yeah.
They just know that it happens.
Right, right.
But for me, I think I sort of, a couple years ago, decided that I can no longer live my life based on the way that I feel in any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to develop a baseline to live at in any given situation so that I can refer to this baseline if I'm like, you know, in an interview, and all of a sudden I like flip this table over, I can be like, wait,
please don't do that, man. There's a lot of expensive equipment on here.
You know, but you do something out of the ordinary, and you're just like, wait, that's off my baseline. I need to circle back and control this feeling. So even right now, that when I'm kind of in a weird spot mentally, I'm referring to my baseline and being like, okay, you're basically there.
Yeah.
I haven't flipped over the table. I think I've been mostly coherent this whole time.
Of course. Yeah. You're the one, you've been more coherent than I have. You're keeping notes.
But look at the notes. They don't make any sense.
It's a list. It's a list. It goes.
The last
goes.
Thing on the list is notes. I wrote notes on here. Like I have to be keeping notes.
Yeah. We just keep on referring back to the notepad that you're keeping over there. Yeah, but like, I got to the point where I finally weaned myself off of this stuff. And I was taking this class called Psychology of Adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the books that we were required to have for that class was called The Pocket Therapist or something like that.
Okay.
And I'd never read like a self-help book before. And this is going to sound really cheesy, but I started reading this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like it had, you know, all these questions that I always had had. And like I was reading this book, and it like really—I mean, it was making sense.
Yeah.
You know, the pocket therapist or something like that. And man, I mean, after taking that class, and I still have problems to this day, but after taking that class and reading through that book, I mean, that book really helped me out. Like, and I don't know. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a cure.
Yeah.
You know, but it made me more aware of how to deal with some of the situations that I, you know, that I was struggling with.
Yeah.
And,
cause there's the stigma to take into account.
Oh yeah.
If you want to tell somebody like, oh, I'm struggling with this right now, you have to gauge whether or not that's going to be acceptable to them.
Well, and that's the thing about being depressed too, is like, and that's what we're doing right now is like talking about it too,
mm-hmm.
is like something that a really depressed person will want to do because they need attention. Right. Mm-hmm. Or a lot, like in my case, that was one of the things that I would always need. You know, I would need a friend to lean on constantly or something like that. But when you're talking about being depressed to somebody who doesn't really quite get it, it can come off as like extremely needy.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're even more alone than you started out as. And you just keep on digging yourself this hole because, you know,
well,
you can't stop talking about
it.
You're
describing things to them that they feel,
right,
to a different degree than you do.
Yeah,
so you're
yeah.
just like, man,
yeah.
I was at home the other night and I was alone and I didn't have any plans and I just couldn't handle it. so I sent a 911 text to my buddy.
Yeah.
He came over and we watched Ghostbusters. And that's the only way I could get by. And they're like, that's not the way I would handle that situation. It's like, oh, I know that's not the way you would handle
it. Yeah. That's what I'm telling you, man. I have a problem. Will you please come over and watch Ghostbusters 2 with me?
It's a great film.
It's a great film.
Have you seen it?
Well, it's man. It's a tough road to be on. That's for sure. I mean, have you ever tried to make steps of like, you know, bettering your situation, or do you still rely heavily on the medication?
I rely on the medication because without it, I can't function in the normal world. Like, I can't show up to work on time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There'll be times where, you know, I just can't carry on a normal conversation. You can't do that in the adult world.
Yeah.
You have to be able to function. You know, if I were missing, like, my right arm or something,
uh-huh.
and had trouble grabbing things, people would be like, oh, it's because he's missing his arm. But with depression, nobody can see your handicap, so you have to pretend like it's not there.
Right, right.
Unless you want to, you know, spend a little while explaining to them what's going on. It's like, it's not that I'm dumb. It's just, like, right now it's taking me a little longer to get through this normal interaction that we're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I get it, man. I get it. I'm there with you. I think I've just had more time to work it out.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and like,
and everybody's,
I said,
like, everybody's different, you know, varying degrees, of course.
For me, like, I have my baseline that I'm working from,
mm-hmm.
which is like I'm maintaining my relationship and my job.
Yeah.
And there are certain red flags that will come up if my depression starts to interfere. Like, if I'm showing up a little bit later than usual, or if I'm working slower, yeah. or in my relationship, if you know somebody's not happy and it's because I'm not talking and a little grumpy or something, it's like, okay, you have to rein that in and figure out. And it's uncomfortable to have to adjust yourself that way. So yeah. then the question yeah. becomes, how do I live in this way that is sustainable and acceptable to the world, but also be comfortable and happy at the same time? You know, because those things don't naturally happen for me. I don't naturally be a good person and feel fine.
Right.
So it's like, then it's like, okay, what medication is going to make doing these things easier?
Yeah.
And that's
and the answer is always heroin.
No way.
How to make things worse, 101.
Man, I did recently get my medical marijuana card.
Oh.
And
do you have problems with that?
Do I have problems with marijuana?
Well, does marijuana make you more depressed?
It
does to me.
It does not. It helps immensely.
Really?
Yeah.
See, yeah, I'm... excuse me. That sip of beer went down the wrong pipe. I have always had, like... And I've been able to recently kind of rein it in, you know, whenever I know how much I can, you know, I can take a puff at a party
mm-hmm.
and be fine, you know. Marijuana has always gotten me very, very high, very high, very easily.
Yeah.
And so I think that's like a key indicator that it also like affects me afterwards much differently than it may somebody else that has more tolerance to it, you know?
Yeah. And it's also weird, like, nobody at the marijuana dispensaries are telling you, like, now this is the amount that you need for
right.
what the doctor has said. They're just like, just buy whatever you want and then just use it as much as you'd like to.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you're yeah. in this position, this new position of being like, okay, so this is my medication, but I have to determine the dosage and then make, and you know, you have to do that anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But nobody's telling you what to do.
Right, right.
So,
and so it helps you out a little bit.
It helps a lot of my symptoms are physical, uh-huh. like physical pain in the morning, or like if I'm in a social situation that I can't quite handle, it'll be physically really painful.
Uh-huh.
And so in terms of managing symptoms, marijuana helps manage that
wow.
physical pain.
Wow. I've never had it manifest in like physical pain.
Yeah. And I was That's also, crazy. I also didn't smoke marijuana as a kid or uh-huh. recreationally at all.
Yeah.
Until... Yeah. You know, recently when I got this card, because I was going through a rough time and I'm like, okay, time to like try something new.
Yeah, yeah.
So totally. This is a new thing that is available. I'm going to go try it out. And it's been helpful, especially since you can just put it down whenever you want to, you uh-huh. know, for a week if you don't need it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then it's like, oh, I can't quite get to sleep. And then you have this help.
That is a totally, that is like the total opposite situation for me. Like I used to have like serious problems with that kind of stuff. And like, I would not be able to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now, especially with having like a kid too, like I'm finally at the point now where like I can just say, nah,
yeah,
you know, not a good idea for me to have that stuff around. You know, yeah. and you know, sometimes I'll you know, get a bug up my butt and we'll party or something, you know, if we're
party.
Covering like Sasquatch Music Festival or something. Like, you know, there's no kid there.
You don't you don't know like in. The journey that the stigma, I mean, you think depression has a stigma, like marijuana has a huge stigma around it. It's like, how is that gonna develop by the time your kid is a teenager?
Oh yeah.
Is it going to
yeah.
be a thing where they were like, yeah, yeah, my father was, he didn't feel like he could have it around, even though at this point in history, it's totally acceptable. Or yeah. it could go the yeah. other way where it's like, we finally decided once and for all, this is a bad thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
my dad.
Well, see, and that was one thing that happened with my dad too, is that I grew up in, you know, this small town. There were a lot of, very, very liberal people mm-hmm. that lived in that town. And, you know, they would allow their kids to smoke weed. Like, it wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. But for my family, it was, because my dad had the same symptoms that I did. And he knew, you know, his brother Gary definitely had the same symptoms. We had a history of, like, really bad drug abuse in our family. And, like, and we knew, or my dad knew, the road that stuff would take me down. And so he was an asshole about it. Like, you know, I mean, to the point of where, like, friends did not like my dad. You know,
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a different conversation for a different day, actually. But yeah, you know, it's same thing we were talking about, man. Like, you know, the way drugs affect your emotional stability is different for everybody.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Yeah,
I foresee in my my future adult life that I will just come up with better ways to uh-huh. approach situations. Like I showed up here.
Yeah, yeah,
which is pretty cool.
You did text me though to see if we could put it off for another hour.
Well, I didn't know it was going to take an hour and a half to get here because I didn't Google Maps it until day of, and I was like, "Oh man,
that's a long ways away."
I didn't know what your schedule was like. I didn't know you had a kid or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like,
yeah.
"Well, if he's just sitting at home, that shouldn't be a." But you've got responsibilities.
Lord knows, I wish I was, man. I wish I was. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming up here, Matt, and taking some time and chatting with me. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, me too. This was nice.
A subject that we don't get to talk a lot about on this show, and whenever we do, I find it fascinating and fun.
Yeah.
Especially when you make a connection like that, too. You know?
And if you happen to be listening to this program and you're struggling with depression or anxiety, just hang in there. I can't give you any advice because your situation is unique, but hang in there. You'll be okay.
I dig it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So we're gonna play one more song to close the show out. The band is called Ruler, and you can find out more about Mr. Matt Beatty on his Facebook page. Just type Ruler into the search bar, or you can go to Matt's Bandcamp page, which has zero information on it.
It wasn't for supposed one song. To have information on it. I put it up because I had to.
Right, right.
Because I had booked a show, and then after it went up, it got written up in NME, and people were emailing me about it, and I was like, hey, I'm making this stuff in my practice space, and this is the only song I have
right now. Well, it's fantastic. It's called Keep Moving, so go and check that out at rulermusic.bandcamp.com. And like I said, yeah, go like them on Facebook. And tell them that you dig it because this music is fantastic. So with that said, please go to iTunes, rate and review the show if you like our program here. Send us an email. You can email me, Aaron@air-raid.net. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter @airraidnet. And, we always love hearing from you guys. And tweeting back and forth with you. So do that as well. What are we going to play?
This is another song that's going to be on the record. It's called The Cure.
The Cure. Mm-hmm. All right. Matt Beatty, Ruler.
All right, here it is.
Thanks so much, man.
I'll relax, and it will be perfect to feel the bones under my skin perfectly fitting in. And I smoked my cigarettes, I drank the coffee, and I made it an answer for when I needed one. Oh, this is a cure. It's a cure for you. Oh, this is a cure. It's a cure for you. And oh, one day I'll relax. You will see the hell in me on my face and down my back. Like poison mercury in my feet and hands will tap to a rhythm sweet and clean and a simple song to sing for when I need one. But this is a cure. It's a cure for. This is a cure, it's a cure for you. Oh, this is a cure, this is a cure. Oh, this is a cure, this is a cure. Oh, this is a cure, it's a cure for you. Under the ground, perfectly getting down, 'cause I smoked my cigarettes and I drank the coffee and I made it an answer for when I needed one. Oh, this is a cure, it's a cure for you. Oh, this is a cure, it's a cure for you. This is a cure, this is a cure. Oh, this is a cure, this is a cure. Oh, this is a cure, it's a cure for you.
Thanks for having me, dude. This is so fun.
Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thanks.